where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Welcome, welcome to Under the Hood. I'm your host, Eddie Caruso, sitting in for Mark Salem. I've got some guests with me today, Alan Salem and Andy Salem. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Eddie. How are you this morning?
Good.
Good morning.
Good. We're here for the next hour taking your calls. If you have any car questions, problems, we've got a bonus because Alan's here, so we can take some diesel questions and comments. If you want to talk about putting some more power into your truck or you have some diesel problems, we're here to take care of that. But this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing, located on the south side of Main Street, just east of Stapley and Mesa. Thompson has been in business since 1970. They are equipped to handle all major and minor repairs on foreign and domestic vehicles. They are a AAA-approved shop and an ASC-certified Blue Seal shop. Brian Thompson is on the TechNet Council for CarQuest. Thompson's Auto was named Business of the Year in 2009 by the Mesa Chamber of Commerce. Mark is proud to have them on his best car repair shop. Now, Alan here, he runs the performance division of Salem Boys Auto. I'm the service manager. I turned wrenches here for 20 years, and about 3 years ago, I became service manager. And Andy, well, she pretty much runs everything. So let's get a little insight on what you do, Alan, and what your portion of Salem Boys is.
I run the aftermarket and performance division. We have our own group of techs that that work, you know, side by side with the other general repair techs. We handle a lot of wholesale and retail. Everything aftermarket, diesel. Primarily, we try to focus on diesel, but everything gets brought in here. We do a lot of repair. Repair, wheels, tires, lifts, everything under the sun, basically, that's aftermarket. So we handle all that kind of stuff. We do a lot of the fun stuff, the stuff that people like to enjoy spending money on.
So window tinting, audio system, video systems.
Yeah, we don't in-house, we don't do any audio video. However, we have great subs that we use for that kind of stuff. Window tinting, yes, we have a mobile guy that comes out. We do everything. If you come to me and you have a request, 9 times out of 10, we can typically get it done on any type of vehicle.
That's awesome. And Andy?
Handle all the payroll, accounting, human resource type stuff, and probably my biggest job is keeping Alan and my dad in line.
Yeah, she's colored. That's the good thing because she has control of the checkbook.
Yes.
No question about that.
Well, like I say, I've been here for 23 years. I remember when I first started here, Alan was, we called him Big Al. What were you, probably 13 at the time?
If you've been here for 23 years, I was 10 at the time.
And, I've kind of watched him grow into his own niche. Does a really good job on taking care of his customers. Pretty much all his business is word of mouth. Someone sees something on a truck, they'll say, "Hey, where'd you get that done?" "Oh, Alan over at SPD took care of that." He even has little banners they put on the back window, Salem Performance Division, with a phone number so they know where to go. And you also deal with some of the dealerships, don't you?
Yeah, we do some of the stuff that. If you want to wrap a lift kit or wheels and tires into financing, there's a few dealerships we work with that do that kind of stuff. That's the kind of stuff you don't really see. You as a customer doesn't really see, but we do a lot of that. Work with some great dealerships, and that's another great part of our business. We're very fortunate to have the customers that we have, the customer base that we have, and the work that we love doing.
And I mean, it's amazing what you can do with these newer diesels nowadays.
Absolutely, they're so technologically advanced, and they're really amazing. They're fun to work on. They're fun to learn about, and they're fun to drive. They're just all around good trucks.
And I mean, you can take a stock Chevy, Ford, Dodge, and almost make an 11-second quarter mile vehicle.
Absolutely, yeah. They're amazing. They go from towing to hauling to driving to racing to anything. They're very amazing vehicles.
I mean, I think your big Dodge diesel probably gets better gas mileage than my Ford Explorer.
Probably so. Yeah, it probably does, and it weighs probably twice as much.
Yeah, and it could probably tow three of mine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, the temperatures are getting up. It's supposed to be 90 degrees today, so the 100s aren't too far off. So we wanted to talk for a little bit about getting your car ready for summer. Whether you do it yourself or you have someone else take a look at it, we want to be looking from the front to the rear. So we'll start with belts, hoses. Want to make sure that none of the belts are cracked or glazed. Hoses should be nice and soft, but not squishy, not like a sponge, or not hard as
pliable,
a rock.
Right?
Pliable is a good word for it. We want to check all your fluids. One of the biggest ones is if you have a battery that you can add water to. The heat in the summer just cooks batteries. I mean, if it's if your car's running about 200 degrees under the hood, it's close to 220, 230. So put your battery in the oven at 230 for 2 hours and see what it does. It starts gassing and making all sorts of mess with corrosion on the cables. And that's a simple thing you can do to clean up. If you wash your vehicle yourself, before you wash it, pop the hood, just take your garden hose, run some water over the battery and over the terminals. It does a great job of cleaning up all the corrosion off the battery. So along with that, we're going to be looking at tires. Are your tires wearing evenly? Is the tread in good shape? Are the tires old? There's actually a date code on the side of the tire that will tell you when the tire was manufactured. And an easy way to check to see if it's time to replace your tires because of tire wear is take a penny with Lincoln facing you with his head upside down and stick it in between the grooves in the tread. If you can see the top of Lincoln's head, it's time to replace the tires. Now going back, we're going to be looking at underneath the vehicle, shocks, struts, are they leaking, are the bushings torn, the exhaust system, is it rusted, are there any loose hangers, is the exhaust rattling around, and then another thing that people don't think about is the trunk. What's in your trunk? It's okay to have a gallon of water in there, or you know, a little toolbox with some tools, maybe
old parts, maybe old takeoff parts, old takeoff belts.
If you're going on a trip.
Right.
But with the gas prices the way they are right now, you don't need to be carrying around those 15 phone books that someday you're going to take to the recycle center. Get any excess weight out of your vehicle that's going to help your fuel economy, your fuel mileage. And one of the biggest things, people think that your fuel economy is related to the gas pedal, but actually the pedal that has the most effect on your fuel economy is the brake pedal. The more you stay off the brake pedal, the more your car is going to coast, the better your mileage is going to be. There's a lot of people that have those instant mileage messages on their vehicles, and you know when you take your foot off the brake or take your foot off the gas and stay off the brake, it may be showing 23, 24 miles to the gallon. Once you get all the way off the gas and stay off the brake, you see that go up to 70, 90 because you're just coasting. So that's one of the biggest things as far as gas mileage. You know, and everyone knows about jackrabbit starts and on and off the gas and, you know, squealing the tires. That's not going to help you with your fuel mileage. And if a cop catches you, he's going to lighten your wall a little bit for that too.
Which will improve your mileage as well.
yeah. And there's something else I want to talk about too, and it's something that the techs, all shops struggle with, is noises and vibrations. Best thing a customer can do is describe it as well as they can, but even better if they can drive with a technician, because the customer drives that vehicle on a daily basis, so he knows what's normal and what's normal. He gets used to some sounds. When something else creeps up that's out of the ordinary, that sends a red flag to him. So when they come in and just describe, well, my car's making a noise, it kind of sounds like this, this is when it does it, we may get in your vehicle and say, well, which of the five noises that I hear are what you're talking about? So that's why the best thing is if you have the opportunity and the shop was willing to do it, and most of them are, go for a ride with the technician or, like me, the shop manager, or the shop foreman or service manager, so you can accurately describe what is going on. We had a Lincoln in here about a week ago, and the customer was complaining that occasionally he would go to accelerate, and it just didn't have any power. So he dropped it off. We looked at it. We found that it had a coolant leak, and the coolant was getting into where the spark plugs were at, causing a misfire. So you go to accelerate, and the car's going da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and it's lacking power. So someone had tried to repair the intake manifold, which didn't take, and the customer had only had this car for a couple months. So we had to replace the intake manifold. We replaced the spark plugs and replaced the spark plug boots. Got all back together. Cooling system was tight, no leaks. Take it out, he's driving it. It's running fine. He goes to get on the freeway, and he's going around the off-ramp, and all of a sudden, there's just like the gas pedal doesn't work. He's got it to the floor, and the car just won't move. But he also noticed that on the dash, there was an icon that came out that said track assist active. So he comes back to the shop. I go for a ride with him. We must have drove it 20 miles. We got it to happen once, but we couldn't reproduce it. So customer came and picked it up. We said, you know, it did this to us once. We're not sure exactly what it was. The customer takes it, gets about 5 miles away. It does it for him. He comes back. I go for a ride with him. And he says, you know, about 2 weeks after I got the car, it started doing this. And it happened both times in the exact same spot. So we took out and drove it, and sure enough, as soon as we're getting from the 202 to the 101, taking that curving off ramp, it does it. So it goes off to the side of the road. Once we get below 20 miles an hour, the power comes back, the track assist light goes off, and we take off. And I said, "Did you see that light on the dash?" And he says, "No, I never saw that before." I said, "Well, that's what's happening. For some reason, it seems like it's the computer thinks the rear tires are doing a burnout, so it's backing the throttle out, taking all the throttle away from you, so you can't do that anymore." Well, what happened was, we get it back to the shop, and I'm looking at the tires. It's got a different brand of tires on the front versus the tires that are on the rear. And the tires are the same size. It was a 225/60/16 tire. So we have a tool that we can use to measure the diameter of the tire.
2 minutes.
So I take that tool, and I put it on the front tires, lock it down. They're both front tires are the same. I go to the rear, and I've got almost 2 inches difference in the diameter of the rear tires. They're smaller than the front. So you take that 2 inches and compute that to the circumference of the tire. The tires in the rear are going a lot faster than the ones in the front. And it must have been just on the threshold of setting it on city streets where you're just going straight. But as soon as you got into a sweeping turn to where the outside tire has to travel further around in that arc, it would set the track assist light. What we ended up doing was we swapped the front tires to the rear, basically so the rear net was now running faster than the front. We took out and drove it on the same loop that the customer and I had done before. The last time we drove it, it did it 4 times. This time, not a hiccup.
Wow.
So it's something that people don't think about, but especially with all-wheel drive vehicles, you have to make sure that the tires on the front and the rear are the same circumference within probably about a half an inch. And I know Alan sees that sometimes with some of the stuff that you work on.
Yeah, the all-wheel drive Denalis, it's imperative that they do that. If those tires, they need to be replaced. If they're worn out, they need to be replaced in four. If they're the all-wheel drive, and that goes for a lot of other vehicles as well.
Well, we're coming up on a break, but we're here to answer your calls at 602-508-0960. We're here for the next hour. If you have a car question or a car concern, whether it's gas, diesel, maybe a motorhome, we can handle anything. And I just want to go into a little bit of, you know, since I've been in the position that I'm at right now, I mean, I love my job. Every day is something new. I get to work on Mark's personal stuff. I mean, even yesterday I was over at his house.
5 seconds.
Working on his pump motor. But we'll see you after the break.
Kelly Clark has been repairing cars in the Phoenix area for more than
service and maintenance in the Phoenix area. If you live near 38th Avenue and Indian School, be sure to visit Larry Harker's Auto Repair. Mark Salem is proud to recommend such a fine shop. And along with that goes with Mark's guarantee. If you use one of his shops that's on his Best Car Repair Shop, you can go to Salem Boys Auto and click on Best Car Repair Shops. There's a list of automotive shops there, whether it be diesel, gas, transmission, body shops. Use one of those shops. If you have a problem with that and you go through the Better Business Arbitration and they decide that it's in your favor and that shop refuses to abide by the Better Business Bureau's decision, Mark will repair or refund the cost of your repair up to $5,000.
And those shops, again, can be found at marksalem.com. Go there and find find one that's close to you and near you and one that you like.
So we've got some lines open at 602-508-0960, but first we're going to go to Tom. Good morning, Tom.
Morning, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Not too bad. Hey, with the price of gas going up, what's your guys' opinion, and do you work on these new hybrid vehicles?
The hybrid vehicles are, I mean, you know, we'll talk, the Honda has one, Toyota has one, obviously, you know, the biggest one is the Prius, Ford has them, Chevy has them, they're good deals, but they're in high demand right now, so the dealers are getting a premium for those vehicles, and in fact, I think they're actually trying to increase the production of the Prius, because it's such a high demand vehicle. They are worthwhile. We do not work on the hybrid portion of the vehicle, on those vehicles. There's actually a set of certain restrictions and rules you have to have, one of them being you have to have like a 14-foot-long fiberglass pole with a hook on it like they used to use to yank people off the stage when they didn't like what they were doing. But because those systems run very high voltage, so they're, you know, a lot of times if there's problems with the vehicles, they're still under warranty, so most of the time they go back to the dealership. What are you driving now? I mean, are you looking...
My wife's driving a Lexus, an ES350, and I understand the 350 is coming out with a hybrid next year.
Yeah, Lexus has quite a few models of hybrid. I mean, you know, like I said, the initial investment is going to be higher than a gas vehicle, but if you plan,
what's the payoff on it though?
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you keep it for, you know, a longer period of time, you're going to get that money back in your fuel savings. And then also, I mean, even right now, the used hybrids are, and all the small cars that get good gas mileage are at a premium. I mean, there's actually a shortage of, you know, the small fuel-efficient vehicles because everyone's trying to snatch them up.
You know, keep in mind, too, there's other vehicles out there that are equivalent to hybrids that aren't hybrids. For instance, we see a lot of the diesels, the Volkswagen diesels, the Jetta, I think the Passat makes one. I think the Beetle even has one, and we get reports on those customers that are getting 40-plus miles per gallon, and they're not getting nearly the premium that some of these hybrids are getting. So keep that in mind also when you're shopping. I know my brother-in-law just bought a diesel, the big Volkswagen car. I'm not certain what it is, but that's a great car, and they get 40, 45 miles per gallon around town. That's excellent for a car with a big car with a diesel like that.
Yeah, but you got to keep in mind, though, that the diesel prices are a little bit higher than,
correct.
What,
yeah,
than
correct.
What gasoline is.
Right. You have a little bit less maintenance on the diesels. Typically we go longer on the oil changes than diesels do, but you're right, diesel's a lot higher, but 40 and 50 miles per gallon sounds pretty good for an extra 10-15 cents.
Well, yeah, it sounds good to me.
I mean, what you might do is if you have any friends that have a hybrid, ask them, you know, how long have you had it? Are you happy with it? Have you had any problems with it? What kind of mileage are you getting versus what they said you would?
Yeah, that's a good idea. I never thought about that.
Because, you know, people love to talk, so both ways. If they like something, they'll talk about it. Boy, if they don't like it, they'll talk about it twice as much.
That's true. Okay.
Well, thanks for your call, Tom.
Okay, talk to you later.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to Mike. Mike, how can we help you?
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Good morning.
I have a 1975 Ford F-150 with two problems. One is I have an auxiliary fuel tank, and nobody has a listing for the sending unit. So I'm wondering if I should just use the sending unit that's listed for the main tank. You think I can get away with that, or any idea?
It, you know, it depends on the physical size of the tank and the shape of the tank, whether or not your main sender will work with the auxiliary tank. But
they're definitely different.
Okay, they do make some universal senders where you can actually the sender actually slides on a little scale like a slide rule. You can use that to adjust for the depth of the tank. But one of the limiting factors is the ring that the sender sits on the tank. How big is the hole where the sender goes in? Obviously, if the hole is 5 inches and a universal sender's got a 4-inch diameter, that's not going to work.
Okay.
One of your best bet maybe check with NAPA.
I haven't tried NAPA.
See if they have some. Or, you know, I'm sure they're still around. There's a company called J.C. Whitney that basically has, you know, almost anything under the sun. And, I mean, how long have you had the truck? Do you know who put that auxiliary tank in?
No, I've had it for about 10 years, and the sender's never worked since I've had it, and I'm just wanting to get it all working now. And so I started looking for parts and having trouble.
Another thing, when you make sure when you're checking with NAPA and these other places, make sure you take it with you. Take it out and take it with you. Clean it up as best as you can and show them. It's a lot easier to see what you're talking about when we have it in front of you.
Sure.
So make sure you take that with you when you go.
All right, I'll do that. The second thing is that whenever I let it sit overnight, then in the morning I get up, I have to crank it for about 10 or 15 seconds and then let it sit for about a minute. Then I crank it again and it'll start up. It seems like it's not holding fuel on the carburetor. Does that sound right, or do you think it might be something different?
Well, now, when it does finally fire up, do you get any black smoke out the tailpipe, or does it chug? Or
I never look for the smoke, but once it starts, it runs great, and then I don't have any more problem all day. But just when it sits for a while, I have that. I guess I can look for that, for the smoke.
Yeah, another thing you might try to do is get some starting fluid, and the next morning when you go out, before you start it up, pop the hood, take the air cleaner off, give it a little of starting fluid, put the air cleaner lid back on, go in without pressing the gas.
2 minutes.
Go ahead and fire it up and see how that does.
I've done that with fuel. I'll put a little bit of fuel in, it starts right up, and then it dies after, I guess, the fuel's burned.
Okay.
And then after I wait, you know, if I crank it again a little bit, then it'll come back. system start running fine.
So you've already diagnosed what's happened is for some reason or another you're losing the fuel in the fuel bowl as it sits overnight. Now, do you know what kind of carburetor it has?
I think it's a Holley, but I haven't looked in a while.
Okay. Because that's, I mean, that's not uncommon with even with some of the Autolite carburetors and the Hollies, and we even see that on some of the GM Rochesters, is just for some reason or another the fuel, whether it's got a bad power valve, be it on a Holley or on an Autolite or on the GMs, they have the main wells that leak, and basically the fuel just leaks out of the carburetor as it sits for 5, 6, 7, 8 hours, and so what you have to do when you get in there, that first 5 seconds you're cranking the engine, all you're doing is refilling that bowl so you can get some fuel up to the carburetor.
1 minute.
That's what I thought it felt like, and is that something that's fixable, or do I have to replace the carburetor? I hate to burn up a starter over it over time.
No, that's absolutely something that's fixable. If it's a Holley carburetor, typically what we see is that the accelerator pump is leaking, so there'll be a little puddle of fuel on the intake manifold right at the left front corner of the carburetor because it's leaking through there as it sits, because that has enough, it's in a position where it can drain the entire fuel bowl. Typically on the Holley with the power valve, it can't drain the whole fuel bowl. So even if you pump the throttle, you'll get a couple squirts in there enough to start the vehicle. But your best bet is to go on. What part of town are you in?
Peoria.
10 seconds.
There's S&S Tire. They're south of Grand, west of 91st Avenue. They could handle that for you. Thanks for your call. Once again,
Mark Salem KKNT. Has a friend at Thunderbird Automotive, and so do you. His name is Tom Fletcher. If you live in the Northwest area, you...
Let's go to Joe.
Hey, Eddie, Ellen, and Andy.
How you doing?
How you doing, Joe?
I got a quick question for you.
Okay.
I've been trying to, have older cars so I don't have to make car payments because I'm on a budget. I have a 99 Dodge Intrepid that runs real good, but lately I noticed that when you don't have the AC on or nothing, when it's just the engine running, and you're stopped at a light with it in drive, you're just waiting for the light, it goes from where it's normally at 650, and it just dumps down, like down to just below 5. And it's kind of weird. But if I have the AC on, it always stays at 650, only when nothing's on in drive when I'm stopped at the light, and it'd be at 625, 650, and then it just goes, ooh.
Now, when that RPM drops off, do you get a rough idle with it, or does the dashboard start
shaking?
No, it doesn't
rough idle or nothing. It just bottoms out to 5, and it just sits there. But if I put it in neutral, it goes right back up to 625.
Well, one of the first things I would probably do is I'd service the throttle body. A lot of times we can get carbon and coking issues on the throttle body, and that impedes the airflow that goes through there to maintain the idle. And there's also what's called an idle repair or idle AC idle kicker valve that controls the idle speed. The computer will open and close that portion of the valve to bypass the throttle plate, so it's basically like a computer-controlled vacuum leak. Now, does this vehicle have a lot of miles on it? Is it just driven mostly on the city streets?
It's 12 years old. It's got like 170, but I rebuilt the whole top end. I did the heads, the intake. I did a lot of work, and like I said, it just recently... And I just yesterday I took the throttle body off when I cleaned it I was reading my manual and you think it could be like an EGR like sticking open or
typically not because when the EGR valve sticks open the scenario most likely is a extremely rough idle and you come to a stop and it dies. It's not something that where you come to a stop and it's idling fine for 5-10 seconds, and then the RPM drops off. It's immediately, as soon as you stop, and even before you come to a complete stop, you'll notice the engine starts running rough because it's just dumping exhaust back into the intake when there shouldn't be.
Oh, I got you. Yeah, it's just weird, but if I put it in neutral, it goes right back up to 625, which tells me the idle speed control thing is working because it works then.
Now, have you, along with this reduced idle speed, any other symptoms with it, a check engine light or anything?
No, I just passed smog check engine, never comes on. It's just weird, and the whole engine sounds like it's going down, like it's losing power. And then I think it's just sitting at 500, because that's just where it just bottomed out.
Uh-huh.
But it's weird that it doesn't do it when I put it in neutral.
Well, because you're taking the load off of it, so another thing that you might want to check is this thing may have what's called a mass airflow sensor, and that's what the computer uses to calculate what the engine load is. So if that is dirty, that will affect what the computer's seeing as fact as actual engine load.
2 minutes.
So
can you clean those?
You can take them out and clean them. You actually do make mass airflow sensor cleaning. It comes in a spray can, just like carburetor cleaner.
Yeah.
So you would unplug the mass airflow sensor, and it's located in the ductwork between the air cleaner box and the throttle body.
Yeah, I got mine on that big old ugly pancake intake thing.
Yeah, so you can take that off, spray it out with some mass airflow sensor cleaner from both sides, from the airflow side and the other side, the back side of it. Put it back in, plug it back in. But the most important thing is, after you do that, you need to at least disconnect the battery for a couple minutes. So by doing that, what you're going to do is you're going to erase the computer's memory of its fuel trims. Because if the mass airflow sensor is dirty, then the computer has based its fuel settings and fuel trims on incorrect data. So even if you clean it, if you don't erase that data,
1 minute,
it's going to take it longer to relearn where it needs to be.
Yeah, I always do that, especially if I trip an engine light. I just leave it unplugged for like 10 minutes.
Yeah, well, that's my suggestion. So good luck with that.
Quick question?
Well, like I said, we still have some lines that are wide open. You can reach us here at 602-508-0960. I'm your host, Eddie Caruso. My guests here are Andy Salem and Alan Salem. Together, we've probably been at the shop here for, what would you say, combined total of 40-something years at least?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, like I said, you can reach us at 602-508-0960 under the hood with your host, Eddie Caruso.
And you're clear.
Host Eddie Caruso. We still have some lines open if you want to give us a call. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We've got Larry on the line. How can I help you? Larry?
Eddie, I've got a 2000 Saturn SL1, and I'm having transmission issues. It hits real hard when it shifts, when you put it in reverse. And somebody told me about solenoids in the transmission, but there's supposed to be like five of them in there, and I'm not sure what to do about it or what the problem is.
Well, there is what's called a solenoid pack in there. Have you had any check engine light or anything other symptoms with that?
I had that, but it's gone away, so I don't have the check engine lights on anymore.
So now, we call this a harsh engagement. Now, does it do it in drive and reverse?
Both.
Both drive and reverse?
Especially if I'm coming to a stop, it'll hit pretty hard.
On that downshift?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Well, the way the computer controls your shift points and shift concerns is there's going to be two sensors in the transmission. One is called the input shaft speed sensor, and then the other one is the output shaft speed sensor. It uses those to determine basically how fast the power is coming into the transmission and what's happening, how fast it's going out. Typically, when we see that concern, we're missing one of those signals.
It'd be either one of the input or output sensor?
Right, and then they call them different things. Sometimes they may call the input the turbine shaft speed sensor. And the output they may sometimes call the vehicle speed sensor. Now, when you had that check engine light on, did you have someone pull the code to see what the code was?
Yeah, I went to AutoZone, and then she told me that my injectors were dirty, and then where I work, I work at a car dealer, you might have to have it looked at, taken apart, and all that stuff, but I didn't want to do that.
Well, I mean, if you're buddy-buddy with some of the people or the techs at the car dealer, have them put a scanner on it. And bring up the transmission data and go for a drive and just see what those sensors are reporting.
Okay. It should tell pretty much if they put it on and then take it for a drive.
Yeah, because typically that input shaft speed sensor is going to read the same as your engine RPM.
Okay. She does race kind of high.
Okay. And then the output shaft speed sensor is going to report what your speedometer is saying. But, your best bet is take it over to Quality Transmission. They'll drive it for free, and they'll let you know what they think the problem is, because they've seen, you know, every transmission under the sun.
And if they don't, if quality's not closest to you, go to the website, marksalem.com, and find a transmission. There's a, at least a couple transmission shops, three or four on our on our website, and we've got the best of the best, and those guys can drive that, and they'll be able to tell you what that thing is. With no problem
quality,
at all.
Quality transmission.
Yeah, yeah, they're located in Tempe, and then we've got Adolph's on the west side as well.
Okay, Adolph's transmission. Okay, I can look that up.
We lost Lou. We have Tony.
You know, I just need somebody to tell me what's going on, so I can fix it. Yeah.
What part of town are you in?
So.
What part of town are you in?
I'm on by Metro Center.
Okay, so Adolph's on the west side is going to be your closest place.
Okay.
They're located at 67th Avenue in Glendale.
Okay. All right. I got an idea, right?
Okay, I hope that helped.
All right. Hey, thank you, and have a good day.
You too. Need a body shop? Mark Salem recommends Phoenix Body Works. Greg May, the owner, will be your advocate if you have an insurance claim. Phoenix Body Works is hassle-free and insurance company-friendly. They know how to work with insurance companies. Greg will make sure your car is put back together the right way, on time, at an affordable price, with quality parts. It is important to repair your vehicle to its pre-accident condition. Mark has been recommending Phoenix Body Works for several years and has heard nothing but excellent things from his customers. Mark is proud to have him on his best car repair shops list. Phoenix Body Works is located on 19th Avenue, half a block north of Deer Valley Road. You can reach them Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Saturday 9 a.m. to 12 at 623-582-1434. That's 623-582-1434. We got another caller on the line. Tony, how can we help you?
Hey, thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
And, you know, holiday wishes to you guys, too.
Happy Easter to you.
You as well.
Hey, okay, the vehicle, 2003 Ford F-150, and I'm talking to the Ford guy now, right?
Yep, you got him.
Absolutely. Okay, the 4.2 liter V6, okay, 5-speed manual overdrive. Love this truck, body's immaculate. I'm reaching 140,000 miles, though.
Okay.
And it's got the little things, you know, you start noticing on the spark plugs, maybe a little bit more residue on one than the other. I have not given it a compression test or anything like that yet.
Okay.
But I want to start planning for the major things that I'm going to have to start replacing because, you know, after 140,000 miles, you got to start doing some stuff to it. What should I be preparing for, you know, that's going to come up, like the pros and the cons, you know, of that motor?
Well, I mean, you've got a Ford, so there's nothing to really prepare for.
I mean, yeah, that's right. I keep forgetting.
I've got a 97 Ford Explorer with a 5-liter in it, and I just turned 291,000 miles. So, I mean, I don't have a crystal ball. I can't tell you what's going to happen to your truck next.
Right.
But as far as the residue on the spark plugs, are you having to add any oil? Is it?
Yeah, it is. It is starting to consume a little bit of oil, and I don't know, you know, whether it's, you know, maybe the valve guides are loosening up a little bit or what. You know, there's no leakage or anything like that I'm knowing. You know, there's no contamination whatsoever in the oil and or the coolant, you know, for the radiator. So I'm just kind of wondering, you know, am I going to have to pull the heads off and recut the valves and clean up the top end, or, you know, possibly?
I mean, at this point, I wouldn't. How much oil are you talking about between oil changes, and what's your oil change interval?
Well, 3,000 miles is the change.
Okay.
And I'm maybe, you know, maybe putting two quarts, maybe three if I'm driving it hard. And, you know, I'm going to be honest, you know, I put my foot in that thing, you know, from time to time.
Uh-huh.
So I'm about, you know, about three quarts, maybe in between, maybe four.
So three quarts every 3,000 miles?
Yeah, maybe four.
Okay, well,
that's a lot.
You know, at this point, I wouldn't do anything. Keep an eye on the oil. Keep up on keeping the oil level where it should be. The determining factor of when you need to go in and make a repair is when it starts to foul the spark plugs with oil. So if it gets to the point where, you know, it's fouling a certain spark plug every 2,000 miles, that's pretty much the breaking point. And then you need to decide, okay, am I better off repairing if it's a valve guide or a valve seal, or do I have an issue where I'm getting oil into the combustion chamber past the rings? And just kind of, and then, you know, just weigh your options. I mean, so it's X amount of dollars to do the heads and pull the heads and do a valve job. or it's this much more just to pull the engine, replace the engine, or rebuild the engine, and then how long am I going to keep this vehicle?
Well, I'm going to definitely keep this thing. This, like I said, this body is immaculate, and I love this truck, and I want to take it out to 300,000 to 400,000 miles. So, I mean, I'll plan on doing whatever I need to get that motor, back the way it was, original.
But now, is this something you're going to plan on doing yourself, or are you going to take it to a shop?
Oh, no. No, I don't have access to a rack or anything like that anymore, a shop, like I used to. So, I mean, I'm going to take it in, and first, diagnose, determine the problem.
Exactly.
And then go from there.
Yeah, and, get a couple estimates. I would shy away from the lowest estimate. That may just be something to get you in the door and say, and you never know. But you want to say, how much do I have to write my check for? I don't want to know just what the parts and the labor is. I want to know everything, taxes, environmental fees, shop supplies. Tell me how much I'm going to have to write my check for when I come pick up my truck. And like I said, I wouldn't go for the lowest, maybe not go for the highest, but, they should be pretty close. I would imagine even on the heads and the engine, we're talking maybe a difference of $5 to $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
And, if you're going with a new engine, the warranty is going to be probably the biggest deciding factor. How long are they going to warranty that engine for?
Yeah. The motor itself has never got hot or anything like that. I've really never abused it,
Yeah.
But,
I said,
how it goes.
Yeah.
I'll probably just buy a beater car in the meantime while I get this into the shop, but I'm going to prepare ahead, have the money available ready to go so I can just put the truck in the shop, let them do it for a week or whatever, and I buy a beater, a car or whatever, drive that for a month if I have to, turn right back around and sell it and get rid of it, while the truck's been worked on.
But like I said, at this point I wouldn't address it. It's going to get a lot worse before it needs to be done. But I hope that info helped you out.
All right, thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Let's go to Ed. Ed, how can we help you?
Hey, I just wanted to compliment you. You recommended And Adolph's on the west side.
Uh-huh.
Great place. I got a truck with 94, I'm sorry.
Uh-huh.
Chevy with a, I redid the engine, put just a whole bunch of stuff, rebuilt the transmission, and I had a problem when I moved here to Phoenix. I took it down to him. He diagnosed it just by me telling him what it did, fixed it. And it's run like a clock ever since.
Well, that's great. That's a great recommendation.
My gosh, 3 years.
That's awesome. That's what we like to hear. And like I said, all of Mark's shops on his best car repair shop list, if there's a problem and they go through Better Business Bureau arbitration and they don't take care of it, Mark will up to $5,000. But those are the calls we love to get, that someone's dealt with someone on that car list. They've been very happy with it. Because like I said, when something's wrong, people love to talk about it. But
yeah,
a lot of times, in your case, attaboy to you for taking the time to say, I was pleased with one of these shops. They did what they said. They were able to fix it right the first time.
Well, I listen to you guys almost every week if I can, because I don't know anything about automobiles. Everything I have to do is I have to take it to a shop or to a dealer and your information is invaluable.
Well, thank you very much. We really appreciate that.
You guys have a great holiday. Talk to you later.
You too.
You too.
Happy Easter. Hey, now this portion of Under the Hood has been brought to you by Quality Transmission. If you have an issue with the transmission, Bob or Greg at Quality Transmission is who you need to call. They have many years of experience and don't guess with your money. They know how to repair transmissions. Quality Transmission is located in Tempe on McClintock, north of University. No matter where you live, they're worth the drive. Tell them Mark sent you. Well, I've got just a little bit of info for the listeners here. There's a recall for the 2012 Jeep Compass and Patriot. It's being recalled for a fire risk. And the recall reads like this. Some vehicles may have been built with a fuel tank assembly containing a damaged rollover valve. In the event of an impact or rollover, fuel leakage could occur, increasing the risk of fire. Now, the Patriots and Compasses that this is affected by were built from December 17th, 2011 through January 2nd, 2012. The Jeep dealer replaced the fuel tank, and the recall is expected to begin in June. But owners can contact Chrysler Jeep at 1-800-953-1403. So that recall is for 2012 Jeep Compass and Patriot, and you can reach Chrysler at 1-800-953-1403. 1403.
Anyway, we thank you very much for bearing with us today and listening to us, calling in, asking questions for us. If you have any questions during the week, feel free to email any one of us. Eddie is Eddie at eddiesba@aol.com.
eddiesba@aol.com.
And I'm Alan at salemboysauto.com. Andy is Andy at salemboysauto.com. Otherwise, you can hit Mark's website at marksalem.com. Find a shop that you like if you're not happy with the one you're using now. If you are happy with the one you're using, stay with it. Good shops are hard to find. And if you have it, then do that.
And if you have any questions, you can go to the FAQ page on the website, and there's a list of probably 40-45 frequently asked questions. Just kind of go in there and match up your symptom or your concern to one of the headings on there. Click on that, and that will give you all sorts of useful information to figure out, you know, what's my next step? Where do I need to go? But the biggest thing is, when you go to an auto repair shop, if you have one right now that you're happy with, stay there. Make sure you pay with a credit card, so if there's a problem with the repair, you have the credit card company on your side. Ask for your old parts back, and you know it wouldn't hurt to say, "Can you tell me why this, you know, why it's bad? Show me what it is," and just that way you have that comfort. And then with your old parts, if you have them in your hand, if there's a problem with the repair, you can take them back to the repair shop and say, "Hey, this didn't fix it. Maybe we need to put this back on." Take a step back with a new fresh set of eyes. And look at the vehicle from another aspect. But I want to thank you for spending part of your Easter weekend with us on a beautiful Arizona weekend. I think we're going to be 90 degrees today.
This was a paid program.
Have a great day.
For informational purposes only.
The things my children were learning in school.